Welcome to another episode of 30 Minutes in the New Testament. 30 Minutes in the New Testament is on that 1517 Podcast Network. You can go over to 1517.org/podcast. Check out all the things that we got going on over there. There's a lot of them. The Podcast Network is blowing up. It's blowing up all over the place.
Do we officially now have 12 with the release of The Soul of Christianity?
Probably by the time you listen to this, it'll be 13. I mean, it's just a crazy thing.
You can't stop us.
You can't stop it. Yeah, The Soul of Christianity, though, is the latest one. That is out. That is a what they call a serial podcast, Eric, which means the entire 12 episodes, I'm going to tie this in, based on the Apostles' Creed, the 12 episodes, it's Debbie Winrich and Damon Voris interviewing different pastors and theologians. You can download the whole first season of that and just listen to it all at once. You can just binge it. That also will get you all prepped up for next year's Here We Still Stand conference, which shockingly is like half sold out at this point.
Dan, is it possible that we're already talking about Here We Still Stand 2019 after we just celebrated Here We Still Stand 2018?
Well, it is possible. It is the truth. Here's the thing, guys. Here We Still Stand 18 was amazing. Me and Eric just got back from it. It was an incredible time. Just an incredible time. I didn't know if it could be better than last year. The consensus was that it was indeed even better. So now we got our work cut out for us for 2019. But for 2019, we will be doing the conference themed around the common faith. So the Apostles' Creed is what has united the church for centuries, and we're going to be celebrating that, looking at that, exploring it. So come hang out and party with us. You can go over to herewestillstand.org. You can see the lineup. Me and Eric will be there, of course, and you can get registered. And right now it's the early bird pricing. So get in there for that early bird, $149. You get an insane amount of things with it. If you've ever gone, you know that you eat more food than $149 worth.
It's true, and all so good. Like, the food is really, really top shelf.
Yeah, so you should come on out. Also, something else happened since the last time that we've been on here, Eric.
Indeed, something else did happen, Dan. There was a book released with your name and my name on it called Scandalous Stories.
Yeah, it's a sort of commentary on parables, and that released the day before the conference. So the people at the conference sold out at the conference. Thank you so much for doing that, you guys. But if you weren't at the conference, or maybe you were at the conference and it sold out and you're like, dang it, I didn't get one, you can go over to Amazon. That's right over there. Here's the thing. This book is under $10. I believe it's $9.95. on Amazon right now.
Can't afford not to.
Go over there and grab Scandalous Stories, a sort of commentary on parables. Me and Eric wrote that book. Chad Bird wrote the foreword. Bring it on. Also, if you have bought that book, if you have it in your hands, or as soon as you get it in your hands, go over to Amazon. Please, please do this. Give us a review. Give us that 5-star review. It really does help with its visibility. All right. Those are the things. Where are we at in Acts? That's what we're really here to do.
Yes, indeed. So all the housekeeping out of the way, we are picking up the story in Acts chapter 22, verse 3. So we left off really right at the beginning of Paul addressing this crowd of people that were basically about to arrest him. And he spoke to the tribune. I'll just bring you back to verse 37 of 21 to set the context. He says to the tribune as they're about to drag him into the barracks, "May I say something to you?" And the tribune said, "Do you know Greek? Are you not the Egyptian then who recently stirred up a revolt and led the 4,000 men of the assassins out into the wilderness?" So they think that Paul is some bad dude, worse than he is. And Paul replied, "I am a Jew from the Tarsus in Cilicia, a citizen of no obscure city. I beg you, permit me to speak to the people." And when he had given him permission, Paul, standing on the steps, motioned with his hand to the people, and then when there was a great hush, he addressed them in the Hebrew language, saying, "Brothers and fathers, hear the defense that I now make before you." And when they heard that he was addressing them in the Hebrew language, they became even more quiet, because, of course, this is a crowd of Jewish people. And he said, verse 3, "I am a Jew born in Tarsus in Cilicia, but brought up in this city, educated at the feet of Gamaliel, according to the strict manner of the law of our fathers, being zealous for God as all of you are this day. Now, let me just stop there to point out something. Who is this Gamaliel fella? Well, if you can go back and look at the writings of the Jewish rabbis from the time, and you will find very quickly that Gamaliel is a very, very influential man in the history of Judaism. He's a very prominent rabbi of the day and was respected by many. And so he mentions Gamaliel's name very purposely to show that he's not just some run-of-the-mill average Jewish dude, but he has been trained by somebody they have great, great reverence for. That said, he goes on then to say what he did. Verse 4. I persecuted this way to the death, binding and delivering to prison both men and women, as the high priest and the whole council of elders can bear me witness. From them I received letters to the brothers, and I journeyed toward Damascus to take those also who were there and bring them in bonds to Jerusalem to be punished. As I was on my way and drew near to Damascus, about noon, a great light from heaven suddenly shone around me. And I fell to the ground and heard a voice saying to me, Saul, Saul, why are you persecuting me? And I answered, Who are you, Lord? And he said to me, I am Jesus of Nazareth, whom you are persecuting. Now those who were with me saw the light, but did not understand the voice of the one who was speaking to me. And I said, What shall I do, Lord? And the Lord said to me, Rise and go into Damascus, and there you will be told all that is appointed for you to do. And since I could not see because of the brightness of that light, I was led by the hand by those who were with me and came into Damascus.
Yeah, so he's just recounting something we already know, obviously, and recounting his conversion, as it were. We've mentioned this before, but there's a couple of things. One, Paul is no small persecutor of the church, destroying families, and I mean he's not good. He gets knocked off the horse he's on, and I do like this. Saul, why are you persecuting me? And again, we've talked about this before, but this that you see here that Christ takes the persecution of his church personally. So he says me. I mean, he's not actually persecuting Jesus. Jesus is not there in the flesh, but to persecute his church is to persecute him. And when he asks, who are you? He doubles down on it and says, I am Jesus of Nazareth, whom you are persecuting.
Yeah, it's not an accident that Paul uses the terminology in his letter to the Corinthians to describe the church as a body, and specifically the body of Jesus Christ.
Right.
So, I mean, Jesus identifies so much with his church that if you hurt his church, you are hurting his body.
Well,
it's like you're punching him in the arm or punching him in the stomach or whatnot. I mean, that's the identification that he's making. He is the head. We are the body.
Yeah. Well, if somebody starts stabbing me in the hand, it will be my mouth that says, stop stabbing me. Now, you're not stabbing right. My mouth, but it's going to be the mouth that speaks. And so, this is the case here.
Mm-hmm. That's right. So as a matter of application or comfort, whatever kinds of struggles you're going through or whatever persecution you might face in your life or whatever difficulties even, I mean, Christ so identifies with you that he is not absent from it. He's not, as Bette Midler said when I was like 2 years old, watching you from a distance.
Right.
Like he's not. That's nonsense. Like Christ is as close to you and closer to you than you can possibly fathom because he feels with you. He identifies with you. When it says in scripture that Jesus wept upon seeing the death of Lazarus or the people grieving over Lazarus, that's not because he's just being dramatic. He literally feels the pain.
Right.
And so, verse 12, one Ananias, a devout man, according to the law, well spoken of by all the Jews who lived there, came to me and standing by me said to me, Brother Saul, receive your sight. And at that very hour, I received my sight and saw him. And he said, The God of our fathers appointed you to know his will to see the righteous one and to hear a voice from his mouth. For you will be a witness for him to everyone of what you have seen and heard. And now, why do you wait? Rise and be baptized and wash away your sins, calling on his name.
Yes.
Now, we talked about this when we went over the passage in Acts 9, where this is initially recorded. And we came to this telling of the story because in the Acts 9 sort of rendering, it doesn't emphasize this part. But when Paul recounts it, this is how central baptism is in Paul's theology. Paul makes sure to mention and connect the baptism that he receives from Ananias with the washing away of his sins and the ability to call on his name. And one of the things that we pointed out when we talked about this the last time that we see here again is that Paul had scales not dropped from his eyes until this moment. Right. So up until that time, he had been blind. He had been in the dark. The light only came on when he came into the contact with the man who would baptize him to wash away his sins.
Right. The baptism, not symbolic. The scales on his eyes do represent something. Mm-hmm. They represent this spiritual blindness dealt with on the hearing of the gospel. What is amazing about this is, think about this. Wash away your sins. Like, think about God saying that to Paul. His sins are many and horrific. What's a sinner like Paul gonna do? Persecutor of the church, breaking up families, murdering people, imprisoning people falsely. Mm-hmm. What about those sins? What can be done about those sins? Mm-hmm. Well, they can be baptized and washed away. How powerful is God in baptism? Powerful enough to wash away those sins. Mm-hmm. It's pretty great.
It is. It's nothing but good news.
And if that's the case, why wait? Get on it.
Get on it. I like it. And so it says, when I had returned to Jerusalem, I was praying in the temple, I fell into a trance and saw him being Jesus, saying to me, make haste and get out of Jerusalem quickly, because they will not accept your testimony about me. Now, interestingly enough, I mean, remember who Paul is speaking to here. Paul is speaking to an audience of Jewish people. What story are they familiar with where a man has a vision in the temple of the Lord speaking to him, or of the Lord presenting himself to him? Well, it's, of course, Isaiah's call to the prophetic ministry found in Isaiah chapter 6. There is something to this. I think throughout this, you can see that Paul is trying to show himself to this crowd as somebody who is very much in line with Judaism, that he is speaking of the fulfillment of Judaism. He is not speaking anti-Jewish. He's speaking of fulfillment of Judaism. And this is just another little hint there that Paul has this similar experience that he reports of being in the temple, seeing a vision of the Lord, and the Lord warns him, make haste, get out of Jerusalem quickly, because they will not accept your testimony about me. And I said, Lord, they themselves know that in one synagogue after another, I imprisoned and beat those who believed in you. And when the blood of Stephen, your witness, was being shed, I myself was standing by and approving and watching over the garments of those who killed him. And he said to me, go, for I will send you far away to the Gentiles.
Okay, so something that's, I love what's not said here. So you have Paul saying, look, I did this. I did some terrible, terrible things. Some terrible stuff. And when Stephen, which is pretty likable, was being killed, like, I was given approval over that. I was there. He's bringing up this stuff, and God doesn't say, yeah, that was pretty messed up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you really blew it there. Like, post-baptism, he's just like, yeah, 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 go.
Yeah, get to stepping.
Yeah.
Get moving.
I don't need to hear about this.
Yeah.
I've already forgotten it.
Yeah. So he, what's interesting is he says, you know, verse 21, that the Lord said to him, go, for I will send you far away to the Gentiles. So he presents himself as being a good Jewish guy whom God appears to and tells him that he wants him to go to the Gentiles. And what's interesting is the response you find in verse 22. Up to this word, they listen to him. Then they raise their voices. So as soon as they find out that God has interest in those filthy, dirty, sinful Gentiles, that's what really sets them off. Away with such a fellow from the earth.
What kind of statement is that? Away with such a fellow from the earth. He should not be allowed to live. Dang.
I mean, this sounds like, again, you know, you and I have talked about this before. People being so zealous for the law that they willfully, easily break the law.
Right.
In the name of the law.
Right.
This is what happens, man. This is all, I mean, so there, you have a mob advocating for his murder simply because he dares to say that God has an interest in those filthy, dirty, sinful Gentiles.
Well, I like how they're so angry that this is what they do. It says, and as they were shouting and throwing off their cloaks and flinging dust into the air, the tribune ordered him to be brought back into the barracks. Like, imagine these guys are like, I'm so angry. I don't even know what to do. I'm just going to throw my jacket on the ground and grab handfuls of dirt and just fling it up into the air.
Reminds me of watching my 6-year-old throw a tantrum, dude.
It's just insane. Like,
this is exactly what he does. Yeah.
Nuts.
Like, you know, like so upset that he has nothing that he can do to fix it. You know, so he just flings some dust into the air, throw off their cloak, which is, of course, it was a symbol. This was not unheard of. This was symbolic for, like, this is a person who is worthy of death. He's blaspheming. I mean, this is really what they're signifying. He is blaspheming.
Well, think about it. What do they do before they stone Stephen? They take off their cloaks.
Yes.
Sit him at the feet of Saul. He's all like, give him the word. They take off their cloaks, like, let's go. Let's do it again.
Yeah, they're ready to stone him. That's right. This is what's happening. They're getting ready to kill him. They're like a pack of wolves getting ready for, you know, to feast. It says the tribune ordered him to be brought into the barracks, saying that he should be examined by flogging to find out why they were shouting against him like this. So, I mean, he's sort of mystified as to why Paul is even offensive to these guys. And so he thinks, well, maybe if I beat him, you know, he'll figure out, you know, he'll confess something to me.
Yeah. Based
on what he's reported so far, there's nothing controversial. There's nothing illegal.
Yeah. Well, this is the Roman go-to move too, because, you know, what did they do to Jesus? They're like, well, we're not going to kill this guy. He hadn't really done anything. Well, I know, we'll just beat the crap out of him.
Yeah.
And that should be appease them. They don't know who they're dealing with though. Like, that's not enough. Now, Paul is about to get real clever here, but if this had went down the way that they thought it was going to go down, it wouldn't have been enough.
No. And so it says verse 25, but when they had stretched him out for the whips, only then, like, they had already got him stretched out, right? Paul lets him go through this whole thing, and then he's like,
well, this is a very calculated move by Paul. He gets them right to the edge before he just blows it apart.
Yes. He says, is it lawful for you to, I don't know, like, flog a man who is a Roman citizen and uncondemned?
In other words, a guy who hasn't been tried and found guilty.
Yeah, is that legal? I'm just wondering. I just had a quick question. And when the centurion heard this, he went to the tribune and said to him, what are you about to do? For this man is a Roman citizen. So the tribune came and said to him, tell me, are you a Roman citizen? And Paul said, yes. The tribune answered, I bought this citizenship for a large sum. Paul said, but I'm a citizen by birth. So, I mean, he's outranking this tribune in his official Roman status as a citizen.
And we see why Paul let it go this far, because it says that those who were about to examine him withdrew from him immediately. And the tribune was so afraid, for he realized that Paul was a Roman citizen and that he had even bound him.
Yeah.
Paul
wanted to. Paul really could have gotten this dude in major, major trouble.
Yes.
That's the point. And so Paul, at this moment, even though he doesn't get this guy major trouble, Paul is letting them know, like, I do have some clout.
Yeah. Like,
you should be careful.
Yeah. The guy is terrified because it is illegal to do this sort of thing without a proper trial, even to bind him up like that. It's against Roman law.
That's right. That's right. So it says, but on the next day, desiring to know the real reason why he was being accused by the Jews, he unbound him and commanded the chief priests and all the council to meet. And he brought Paul down and set him before them. And looking intently at the council. So again, Paul's speaking to primarily a Jewish crowd here, and then the tribune. Brothers, I have lived my life before God in all good conscience up to this day. And the high priest Ananias commanded those who stood by him to strike him on the mouth. Then Paul said to him, God is going to strike you, you whitewashed wall. Are you sitting to judge me according to the law? And yet contrary to the law, you order me to be struck?
Oh, yeah, this is Paul doing that thing. Did you just, like, in your zeal for the law, break the law?
Those who stood by said, would you revile God's high priest? And Paul said, I did not know, brothers, that he was the high priest. For it is written, you shall not speak evil of a ruler of your people. So Paul, I mean, Paul is like trying his best to show that he is not, he's trying to like to play their game. You know what I mean? Like he's trying to play by their rules as much as possible. Like I'm not trying to break the law. I'm not trying, but the fact is Ananias did indeed break the law when he spent, when he slapped his face. I mean, when he struck him on the mouth.
Yeah. Yeah.
Paul was not wrong to point this out, but still it may have had the tone of disrespect. And so he says, well, it's okay. Okay. I shouldn't have said that. Sort of backs off a little bit.
Right. But he's about to get real clever.
Verse 6. Now, when Paul perceived that one part were Sadducees and the others Pharisees, he cried out in the councils, brothers, I am a Pharisee, a son of Pharisees. It is with respect to the hope and the resurrection of the dead that I am on trial.
This is brilliant. This is so brilliant. What he has discerned is that here's the thing about legalists. Legalists have their factions because they eat each other. They end up dividing over all the things. Their circles get smaller. There's not like, you know, grace people and then legalists. There's like grace people and then like lots of little factions of legalists because they can't agree because they're legalists. That's what they do. And so what he sees here is we got Pharisees and we have Sadducees. And Sadducees, they don't believe in the resurrection of the dead.
That's right.
And the Pharisees do.
Of course do.
And this is a big divide between them. And he uses the fact that he is preaching Christ resurrected from the dead to say, I know what the deal is here. I'm being persecuted for believing in the resurrection. Which now he's just pitted the Pharisees and the Sadducees. Like he's like starting a different fight between the guys that are like trying to get him executed.
And it's a brilliant move because it works, man. I mean, verse 7, and when he had said this, a dissension arose between the Pharisees and the Sadducees, and the assembly was divided. And of course, you can see, you know, that the tribune here is like, oh, good grief, this is ridiculous. You know, like, I mean, so it really does work out well because it says, verse 8, for the Sadducees say that there is no resurrection, nor angel, nor spirit, but the Pharisees acknowledge them all. Then a great clamor arose, and some of the scribes of the Pharisee party stood up and contended sharply, we find nothing wrong in this man. What if a spirit or an angel spoke to him?
Dude, Paul is brilliant for doing this.
So now he's got half the legalists on his side.
He just gets the legalists to fight it out, and then it works to his advantage.
And when the dissension became violent, so now the Pharisees and the Sadducees are literally getting violent with each other, and Paul's just going to, he's sort of being washed up in the middle of it. Said, afraid that when the dissension became violent, the tribune, afraid that Paul would be torn to pieces by them, commanded the soldiers to go down and take him away from among them by force and bring him into the barracks. The following night, the Lord stood by him and said, take courage. For as you have testified to the facts about me in Jerusalem, so you must testify also in Rome. So again, emphasizing the same thing that we saw at the beginning of Paul's testimony. You have, in the midst of Paul being persecuted, being violently attacked, being in the midst of all this dissension, Jesus is there.
Right.
Standing by saying, take courage. I'm with you. And you're not done here yet. I mean, he lets him know that. Like, this is what you did in Jerusalem. I'm still going to be working through you all the way to Rome.
Yeah, and this is if you needed validation that you should go to Rome, this is it for Paul. Mm-hmm. And he is going to go to Rome, and Rome is going to be the last place he goes. This is winding up. And he will travel to Rome. Spoiler alert, most of you know that Paul dies in Rome. But we get he does a lot of great things, imprisonment in Rome at the end of his life. But it is necessary for him to go to Rome, so Paul could ease. This could easily end, and next week we will get into a plot to kill him. But there's so many instances you see where it could have been all over for Paul. I mean, this is certainly one of them. I mean, this thing went crazy, and he isn't. It reminds me of a quote from Luther who says, "I am immortal until God says otherwise."
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and you see this with Paul. Like, Paul is going to get to Rome. It is in the plan of God that Paul makes it to Rome. Mm-hmm. And this is part of the reason that he's so fearless. Is he knows that there's a set path for him to walk, and that he's immortal until the path is walked.
Mm-hmm. And the same is true for you and I. I mean, we might not have the clarity about our future that we're going to end up somewhere or that we're destined to go somewhere. But we do know that the same truth is, in fact, the case, that we're immortal until Jesus says otherwise. And then we really will be immortal forever and ever. So there is a sense in which we walk out of here. We walk out into the world with unbound freedom. Because no one can really touch us unless God says so.
Right.
And therefore, we don't have to fear what's around us. We can go out with a bold sense of confidence.
Right. And one of the things that you see this, you say, take courage. Not take courage, everything's going to be okay. But take courage, for as you have testified to the facts about me in Jerusalem, so you must also testify in Rome. There's no promise here that it's going to go better in Rome. In fact, yes, it does not.
Worse.
It does not go better. But he tells him to take courage, to be courageous, and go do what you just did here. Go do that in Rome, with no guarantee that, well, it's pretty rough here, so maybe go to Rome. It'll be better. No.
And this is the truth for us. I mean, we don't know what each day holds, but it's not about our comfort. It's not about what is whether we can have a guarantee that we're always going to be safe, even though that's like our modus operandi. Like, we want to have a guarantee of safety. Fact is, no day has a guarantee of safety, but we do have a guarantee that we'll have Christ with us no matter what dangers we face. And that'll be enough.
That's right. And that's going to do it for us. Hey guys, if you're out there preaching that scandalous gospel and the legalists are going to kill you, take a play out of Paul's playbook and just turn them on each other. Might get you buy you some time. It is doable. Go over to Amazon and grab that Scandalous Stories, a sort of commentary on parables. Me and Eric have written it just for you, and we would love it if you've got it. And then if you do have it, if you'd rate and review it, that would be awesome. Here We Still Stand 2019. Tickets are available. Roster is set. Go over to herewestillstand.org, check it out, and get on that early bird rate, man. Don't wait for the prices to go up or for it to sell out. Half the tickets are gone to that thing already.
It will sell out fast. There's no doubt about that. Don't wait.
Do not wait. Do not delay. Like baptism, do not wait. Get your tickets. Eric, we'll see you next week.
All right, cool.